From listener-supported KTOL, welcome to Juno Afternoon for Tuesday, October 3rd, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Cheesh, Hawa Salama, for joining the conversation. On today's show, it's Filipino-American History Month, and KTOO News is launching a huge project called Magakwento, which means the stories in Tagalog. We'll hear from executive producer for the project, Tasha Elizarde. Juno Jazz and Classics kicks off tonight with the Calder Quartet. They are in the studio today to share a bit about what you will hear tonight. We'll have the Arts Roundup for October with Phil from The Jack. And first up, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We'll chat with the Bartlett Hospital Mammography team about resources and other important information. Those conversations, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansengress.com/careers.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
For over a century, Filipinos have shaped the community of Juno. But how did we get here? And why do we stay?
I'm just here to try and make sure that this organization, that effort that people put into making this community vibrant and what it is today, doesn't falter.
Listen to KTOO's new podcast for stories from Juno's Filipino community. Magakwento premieres October 6th. Find it at ktoo.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sa umaga na may talong ka ng iyong amang tuwang-tuwa sa'yo.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Akbay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That was a little Freddie Aguilar, a knock, a Filipino singer. We're going to be playing Filipino music all week this week as we start celebrating the launch of Magakwento, a project from KTO News, as part of Filipino American History Month. It is also Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October, a global campaign to raise awareness and support for people affected by the disease and to also work toward prevention through knowledge and action. Joining us from Bartlett Regional Hospital's mammography team are Renee Daniels and Angie Bradshaw via Zoom to assist us with knowledge, resources, and information. Gunath Cheesh, Angie, and Renee, how are you today?
Doing good. How are you
doing? Good. How are you?
Awesome. So it's so great to have you joining us to give us a little bit of information on Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And where do we begin? I know that 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime. That's a high percentage. And so it seems like not only the awareness, but also prevention and knowledge of resources are very important. Yeah.
Yes, it's very important. And we encourage folks to come in and have their screening mammogram. Age 40 and up. And they can come every year or every 2 years, depending on their conversation that they want to have with their doctor.
Gotcha. Okay. And I know that sort of one of the highest priorities is sort of educating women on what they can do to be proactive. So what besides getting a screening every year after the age 40, what else can they be doing either before that or, because I know it's affected some people who are younger than 40, right?
Yes, I think when you're younger, you should start the practice of doing self-breast exams. It's important to be familiar with your own breast tissue. You could have a benign lump, but this is a lump that you've had for many, many years, and it's not changed. You can also discover, and a lot of folks come in and say, well, I'm very lumpy. I got lots of lumps. But if you do your self-exam, regularly, you get familiar with what your breast feels like and you can discover something that's new.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. That's good to know. Now, I know that most people have good intentions during the month of October. We know that the pink ribbon is sort of the symbol of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I was looking at some statistics and it's pretty amazing. Apparently in 2022, there were over 43,000 deaths from breast cancer. And it's also the leading cancer worldwide. According to the numbers I saw, there was 685,000 approximately deaths in 2020 worldwide. That seems like a very large number.
Yes, that is definitely our goal, is to get people in here for screenings every year after the age of 40. And that is one of the main reasons, because we want to find the breast cancer before you can even feel it in your own breasts. And I do want people to know how important that is, because even our new technology, having our 3D mammograms, they have made it even more significant and easier for us to find breast cancer at a smaller scale. So we want to find it before it goes anywhere, especially your lymph nodes, things like that. So we do want people to know the importance of finding it before they can feel it in their breast.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. And you mentioned that technology. I know I was looking at what you have there on the website about that low dose Genius 3D mammography from Hologic. Is that the name of the company?
Yes, Hologic.
Yeah. And so these are advanced digital mammograms. So does that mean it's a fairly easy test overall to come in and get checked out with?
Yes, it's a fairly easy test. It takes you about 15 minutes from start to finish, because we do four images, two on each breast, four all together. And it's pretty quick and pretty easy. And I know people have concerns with pain, with the compression. But what we do is we work with people with their tolerance with the pain. We do want to give them adequate compression. That's the word we want to use, adequate. Enough to compress the breast to see all the structures clearly without motion, but not so much that they don't want to come back and see us again.
Right.
Correct.
Right. Absolutely. And is it still a recommended, you said after 40, is it still recommended to be a yearly exam, or is it something that can be done more occasionally?
You have a patient in the ED.
Oh, so I couldn't hear you because we got a loudspeaker going.
I heard that. There's an announcement in the hospital for sure. No, I was saying, is it still recommended to be a yearly exam after 40?
After 40, we say yearly to every other year. Okay. And that's a discussion people have with their doctor.
Yeah.
Because they could have a lot of risk factors. I mean, the main risk factor for breast cancer is being a woman.
Right.
But you could have other risk factors, like you didn't nurse or you haven't had children, or
breast cancer in your family,
breast cancer in the other breast. So you have all these risk factors. So you may want to come more often, or if you have like no risk factors, nothing going on, you may want to come every other year. But that's, like I said, a discussion with your doctor.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
With your doctor, and also a personal choice also. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so what other resources are available locally? Are there support groups, or are there other ways that people can find out information and other resources that might be available through Bartlett or through other organizations?
From other organizations, the only one I really know well is Cancer Connection, which help with folks getting out of town and having their cancer workups down south. Do you know of any other?
Well, what's the name of the one though?
Okay, and Ladies First offers assistance with payment on mammography for folks that are on the poverty level.
That can't pay for or don't have insurance. They offer women to come in and get their free mammo and whatever else they would need for their breast health.
I see. Okay. That's great. That's great news, so that everybody can have access to the services, so that nobody's left out. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I just want to say, you know, some folks go down south for their mammogram, but I just want to say that our facility is FDA approved, ACR approved. We are accredited in ACR with stereotactic biopsy, and all our mammographers are certified. We have breast mammography and breast MRI at our facility.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I know I noticed this on the nationalbreastcancer.org website, but there's sort of for social media purposes, there's sort of a hashtag that they're using, which is more than BCAM, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so it's sort of getting people to get a little bit more involved, not only get screened, but maybe make a donation to breast cancer research, or take action by, you know, helping someone you may know, or donating clothes, or driving people to their appointments, whatever else there might be in terms of, you know, assistance or help that you can offer. So I'm just curious if you have any of the thoughts in terms of more than awareness for this month. What else should we be thinking about, or what else can we do if we're not affected? What else could we be doing?
Well, just that. You could be that person that helps that person make sense of their appointment. You could be sitting with them when they're having their biopsy. You could be supportive if they have to go down south to have any other care done. I don't think there's an actual organization that does that, but we are a small town. We take care of our families and friends.
Absolutely.
And so
I think it's just important too for women or men to talk about it, you know, just being able to talk about breast cancer and breast cancer awareness with other people, even if you haven't been affected by it personally. I mean, most people have been affected by it in their families a lot of the time, you know, and things like that. And I think just talking about it more and being more open with it is great to bring awareness to other people in the community.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great. And where else can we find, where can we find out information about you all in terms of what's going on with, what's the best website or way to reach you? Is there a phone number, anything if people have questions?
Well, they can always call me on my desk phone. My phone is 796-8815. And you can leave a message if I'm not there, and I'd be happy to call you back.
And this is that Renee who was giving the phone number?
Yes, this is Renee.
Renee. Okay. Renee Daniels at 796-8815 for more information. I know you can also go to the Bartlett.org website, and they'll have a page which sort of talks a little bit about the services based on all the different radiology and different fields that are going on there. Specifically, though, this is the mammography department.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah. And then I just want to put it out there that we're going to have a clinic on the holiday on Alaska Day, the 18th. And we have 15 spots for folks who want to come in and have their mammogram on the holiday. It opens at 7 a.m. to 4:30. And they can call the hospital schedule line at 796-8802.
Yeah, and we do have... Yeah. We have goodies this month for all of our patients that come in. We do have little spa bags and some breast cancer awareness pins and little manicure sets. Like, we get pretty excited about it. And we have some, we are giving away a gift basket too, that Solo Rad has donated. And we did have the Relaxation in Mendenhall Mall. They donated some really cute breast cancer awareness earrings, and we will be giving away flowers also on the 18th when we have that special day that we're going to be open for Alaska Day for the holiday. So we do some fun stuff during October just to kind of give people some joy for breast cancer awareness.
Absolutely. That is so great. Well, thank you for joining us today and giving us a little rundown of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And for more information, visit Bartlett Hospital website or call Renee at 796-8815, and look forward to Alaska Day on the 18th for an appointment there for this month. So Renee and Angie, thank you so much for joining me today. Really appreciate it. Gunath Sheesh.
Thank you.
Gunath Sheesh.
Have a good day.
Up next, the Calder Quartet kicks off the Juno Jazz and Classics Fall Music Festival tonight. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Glenné D have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. My goodness, that was so good. That was so good. If a couple of you want to jump on these microphones right there, we were playing a little something of the Calder Quartet out of the vault, but then we transferred to playing live, which is so much better on this wonderful Ear Trumpet Labs Myrtle microphone. It sounds so good. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Akwan. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tonight is the kickoff to the Fall Music Festival produced by Juno Jazz and Classic. It's a full week of concerts and more. Tonight, the Calder Quartet will be playing at Shuka Hit at the Walter Sobolev Building. The two performances are said to be sold out, though, so at least some of us who can't go tonight got to hear a little something live on the radio here. But there might be a waiting list, so you could show up. Usually there's always somebody who isn't able to make it. So if you're really interested in the Calder Quartet, I would go, and there's probably going to be a waiting list or something like that. So anyway, Gunnath Cheesh for you all being here today. There's four of you. I have two microphones here. I might want you to tell us who you are and which instruments you play, if that would be helpful. So let's start with you here, sir.
Okay. Yeah, we're the Calder Quartet from Los Angeles. I'm Ben Jacobson. I play violin.
I'm Jonathan Marshall, and I play viola.
And you can introduce the other two in the background for me.
And behind me on cello is Eric Byers, and also behind me is Teresa Stanislav on violin.
Oh, it's so great. You guys sounded fantastic. Have you play for the whole hour, although it's more what you're going to be doing tonight. So I know there was an open rehearsal last night at a different venue. How did that go?
It was great. We you know, unpacked and played through a couple of different pieces, and the audience was there. It was really, it was so much fun for us because the audience was super engaged and could tell they were really listening super intently. And we ran through a couple of pieces, and then we actually stopped and rehearsed, and we kind of talked about the pieces with the audience. And it was just so much fun. It was actually, it was like the ideal way to rehearse. I wish we could do that more often.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool thing, like just sort of open it up and have people see like the behind the scenes and, you know, the band squabbling between which is supposed to be happening, right? Which note is going where?
Yeah, we had played for them a piece that we have to play on Friday, actually, down in Los Angeles, a contemporary piece. And so I think it was fun to show them some music that they probably hadn't heard before and that they weren't going to hear tonight, and lots of extended techniques and things. So they got a chance to sort of listen to that and ask some questions about that kind of music.
That's so cool. And have you been to the Shuka Hit Space today yet?
No,
not yet. You're going to go there right after this.
Yeah.
It is. It's going to sound so good in there. And it's at the Walter Soboleff building, and it's basically like, it's like a traditional clan house, inside this building. And, this, I can't imagine. I think Sandy from Juno Jazz and Classics said they sold about 90 tickets per concert. So it's going to be a small, intimate concert, but the sound in there is just going to be lovely.
Yeah.
So I wish you all the best tonight for that. Now, is this your first time to Juno?
No, we were here maybe like 10 or 12 years ago. We were in Juno, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Valdez for a tour. And I think it was like in March of 2014 or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so yeah. Probably the Anchorage Concert Association.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they put together little tours for the state, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. But I can't remember what the venue was here in Juno. It definitely wasn't this.
This is new. The place you're playing tonight wasn't around back then. You might have played at the Jack, which is next door, or another, maybe the high school, which has a hall as well.
It was the high school.
Yeah. So sometimes the high school. Okay. So now the name Calder Quartet, you're named after the American sculptor Alexander Calder. How did that come about, and how does his inspiration find its way into your work?
Well, I think our first inkling of it was pretty early on. We were founded in 1998 when we were all freshmen at University of Southern California. And
you look like freshmen now. I don't know what you're talking about.
But yeah, I think it was our first professional concert. They asked us for a name, and we sort of like sat and thought for a while. And then we were thinking about these mobiles that Calder has made that are those hanging sculptures. They kind of turn in the wind a little bit. And they also have to be sort of perfectly balanced. There's something really kind of almost musical about it. It seemed like it related to a quartet where all four members are sort of need to be perfectly balanced with each other, and there's sort of a fluidity to things. Like no one performance is the same. Sort of like when you look at a mobile, it's never exactly the same as the last time you saw it. And there's something about music too that it's like this art form. Like we just played this movement and it's just evaporated into the air. It's kind of like an interesting thing how it doesn't have any substance necessarily, but it has sort of like in a way just it felt like that kind of related in a way to the mobile.
So since somebody wasn't an art history major or anything like that.
Most certainly not.
Happened to be. What was that we just heard here live in the studio?
That was the Presto from Beethoven's String Quartet Opus 130. It's the second movement. It might be perhaps the shortest string quartet movement he ever wrote.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it worked perfectly for radio. And the thing I was playing before that, which was from the album Arcadiana. Okay. I couldn't say that. And it was the Tango Mortale.
Yeah.
That was just a little bit of what we were hearing while you guys were all getting set up. So that was pretty great. Now, I know you also have a commitment to new work, and I think you've even received awards for that kind of a thing. Why is that important to you to keep finding new work?
Well, as we started as a group, like really wanting to play like Bartok and a lot of the standard repertoire, but then USC has this really great new music program and a lot of composers around. So pretty early on, we started, you know, talking with composers and started commissioning pieces. And in a way it's really neat to be able to commission a piece because you can actually ask the composer a question. You can like they can come over and come to a rehearsal, or you can call them up, which is not quite the same with Beethoven. So it's been sort of like a real important part of our sort of trajectory as a group, kind of commissioning. I think we've commissioned close to 100 pieces, and we're still actually next week going to premiere a piano quintet down in California by a composer named Timo Andres. And so it's kind of inspiring because, like, you get a piece, it's never been played before. You're kind of sussing out how it all fits together. And in a certain way, like, over time, playing a lot of new pieces, interacting with composers, it kind of gives you a bit of maybe a certain confidence interpreting the old stuff as well.
Oh, like, yeah.
Kind of builds your intuition in a certain way, in addition to all the kind of like performance tradition that exists with all the old music.
So, like, working with a new composer can kind of give you insight into maybe what some of the composers who are no longer here were maybe thinking in different times, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I also know that, like, composers, you know, it's gone from, you know, sort of big arrangement. A lot of, you know, movies and television is where a lot of composers are now working. Is that same thing happen for quartets sort of this size?
Yeah. I mean, you know, quartet of this size is very versatile and can, you know, obviously play the standard canon, lots of new music. There's concertos for string quartet and orchestra, and then, you know, over into commercial music with, you know, film and TV, where they'll either have a really small score for just string quartet, or they'll have a solo string quartet and then a larger orchestra. So we're lucky to be in a very versatile medium.
I mean, and you're based in Los Angeles, so you're right there in all of that.
It is, yeah. You know? It's a good place to be.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of getting access to that, so yeah. it's really cool. Yeah. So I know that tonight's concerts. You have two concerts tonight. One that's in about 2 hours at 5:30, and one that's at 7:30. They're at Shuka Hit at the Walter Sobolev Building. Unfortunately, both of them are sold out. Which is great news for the festival and great news for you. Bad news for the rest of us who didn't get tickets, although there probably will be a waiting list. Where can we follow you as a group?
Well, we're, you know, all over the internet. I think we have an Instagram page and a Facebook page. We've got a website, calderquartet.com. So, lots of recordings, I think, we're up on YouTube as well. So lots of places to find us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I wish we had more time. I could spend the whole hour with y'all, have you play more. But you got to get busy.
You
got to go play concerts and maybe get some food and do all those sorts of things. So I really appreciate you giving us a little bit of preview and helping us sort of launch the music festival for this week. Break a leg tonight. And thanks so much for coming in and bringing your instruments and all of that good stuff. I really appreciate it.
Goodness gracious for being here. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks absolutely. So thanks so much. Okay. Up next, KTOO kicks off its Maga Cuento project. We'll have part one of our interview with executive producer Tasha Elizarde next here on Juno Afternoon from KTOO. You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Junawak Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. That's Lola Amor, Reigning in Manila. Maga Cuento, which means the stories in Tagalog, is led by KTO's community engagement producer, Tasha Elizarde. Our interview was pre-recorded, as Tasha is working on many details for this week's launch. Today is part one of that interview, and then on Friday's show, we'll have part two, where we'll also hear the very first episode of the podcast. This project, Maga Cuento, is a podcast, a community celebration, as well as a museum exhibit. For more information on the events, visit the Philo Community Inc. page on Facebook or kto.org/Filipinos-in-Alaska. There's also a big logo for the project on the KTOO webpage. So, here is part one of our interview with Tasha Elizarde. For the better part of a year, the KTOO newsroom has been working on a large project that culminates and launches this week. Magakwento, which means the stories in Tagalog, is led by KTOO's community engagement producer, Tasha Elizarde, who joins me now for a look at this awesome project and all of its components. Tasha, gunath chish, salamat for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. You know, just a short walk from my office desk, so
to the studio.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to have you in today to talk about this huge project. So Magakwento is a project that you've been working on for 9 or 10 months.
Yeah, I think it's been 10 months now, which is a bit. That's kind of crazy to think about. It's almost been a year.
Wow. So how did this project come about? What was the seed? What was that germinating seed?
Right. So pretty much what happened is about 10 months ago or so, I think it was also around October, I was visiting the Filipino Community Hall because at the time, KTOO was doing the revision documentary series, which we're still producing. But for that episode, I was working with Paige Sparks to collect some old photos for one of the documentaries on the Gold Digger Restaurant. And so, I was just like, oh, yeah, I know where to find them. It's probably going to be at Philcom Hall, the place that I grew up in with a lot of other Filipino families. So I walked in there trying to find photos and I just realized, oh my God, there's a ton of things around here that are really cool. And there are a lot of items that I just didn't even think existed. So looking through some of the plaques, the photos that were already up in the walls, I was thinking it would be really cool if the space could be kind of built up a little bit more so folks could kind of walk in, check out the history, all of that. And so that's really where this project started is I had like this personal mission to try and record and share some of this historical information that I didn't know despite having grown up in the community.
Wow. That is amazing. So from that little thought to almost a year, basically a year later. And it now was the original, I don't know what the timing was originally for this thought, but it happens to be coinciding with Filipino American History Month, the launch of this event, which is going to be the first weekend of October. And was that planned or was that sort of serendipitous, the timing that it worked out in terms of all the planning that you did? Did you have this as the end date in mind?
It was kind of both. Originally, we were trying to aim to get some of these pieces together before the summer, just because I was thinking, hey, like we're going to have a lot of tourists come in, a lot of cruise ships come in. It'd be wonderful to be able to share that with them too. But, you know, like this project kind of grew and things got bigger. And so we ended up pushing it. But it was coincidental in the fact that this year is actually the first year that Alaska will be celebrating Filipino American History Month via state statute. Before this year, pretty much the legislature would have to pass a declaration to be celebrating. So I like to call it FAM. So Filipino American History Month, FAHM or FAM. And so it kind of just all came together because this was also the same year that Representative Genevieve Mina, who is the second Filipino legislator to join the Alaska legislature, also was elected. And her first bill to pass, which is, it's crazy because it was her first session, you know, was the FAM bill. And so she will actually also be coming down for the October 6th through 8th events, which I'm pretty excited about.
That's awesome. Now, it is a fact that Alaska has the largest concentration of Filipinos of any state.
Yeah, at least that's according to, I want to say that's according to sometime in the 2010s. It's tricky because, you know, I could talk a lot about how important it is to record accurately numbers or it's a whole thing, but basically, like, census data is not always available around how many Filipinos there are in any state, oftentimes because when they do counts, it's Asian Americans only rather than, you know, Asian American as a group is such a diverse group that we can't really rely on that number to understand how many Filipinos are here. But according to sometime in the 2010s, that was true.
But we do know that Juneau specifically has a very large Filipino yes. population, very active Filipino population. And so this project seems to be a perfect fit for Juneau and this community. And the fact that you took this on is amazing. I know you have had tons of support from the news team and from community members and community leaders and partners and all that stuff. But for you personally, before we get into the details, I'm just curious, like, what is it like to run a project like this over the course of a year?
It's definitely exciting. No day looks the same. I didn't expect to be, you know, age 24 being an executive producer for a three-parter project. You know, it's definitely been crazy. Like, I actually started doing this thing where I'm trying, if I ever remember, to like record parts of my day. Just because everything I do is so random and a bit chaotic. Like yesterday, I spent a lot of time just at Philcom Hall trying to prepare for the events, which means like basically digging through a ton of the stuff in the hall and trying to prepare it in a way that's presentable, which doesn't, on its surface, doesn't sound that tricky, but like in the details, it means you're hanging up a lot of different items. All that, even before we even got to the process of being able to hang up and put things on shelves, all of that, I was spending like pretty much till May or June since the start of the year. So like 5-6 months just trying to find and collect all the items and sort them into different piles. So some of that work was already done, thankfully, because Ed Carrillo, who's kind of like the interim building manager there and a really awesome volunteer, had sorted a lot of things. But then it's a lot of work to do for an entire two-story hall to be able to figure out what's where. And so sometimes I would, you know, my favorite story to tell is that I found a photo of my grandmother, my Lola Sally, on my dad's side inside this kind of gross looking manila envelope. And it was along with all of these other photos that were taken in the 60s. And that folder itself was underneath a shelf on the ground. And I also just want to like express like that envelope looked pretty gross. It was unlabeled. And so when I found them, I was like, wait, what the heck? And on the back, it said Pinchang Family Collection. And I realized like these are donations that were given from one of the families to Juneau. But it, because the hall is so big and there's so many items just around, that one somehow just, you know, ended up in a crevice, a literal crevice. So
you're able to sort of get it and make it presentable. And that's, wow. Yeah, that
we
is.
We ended up framing those. And then those are now in the main hall as part of the installation. And another cool thing that we were working on a lot. And I say we because I've had a ton of really dedicated volunteers who have spent some time this past month trying to get some stuff together because it's a lot of work to do for one person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'm most excited about is that, speaking of photos, we took all of these, the photos that I was able to find in those 6 months, because, you know, some of them were in crevices, some of them were in photo books that were like hidden upstairs, some of them were like hidden with all these other book donations that we've collected over the past 20 years. And I took all those photos. We worked on making sure all the photos were properly in photo books, all of that. And then they're now living downstairs so that people can access them along with other Philippine-focused literature, as well as like articles and media that's been published about Philcom Inc. as well. So that's going to be kind of like our library of items, which to my knowledge, I don't think that they're, well, yeah, I mean, Philcom Hall is the only Filipino organization building in the whole state of Alaska. So I'm willing to say that it's probably the only library like that to exist in Alaska.
Wow. That's really great. We're talking about MAGA Cuento, which is a project from KTO's news team led by KTO's community engagement producer, Tasha Elizarde. Tasha, you said that the project encompasses three large components. So there's a podcast, a museum exhibit, and a community celebration. Let's start with the community celebration. What is that going to be? Where is it going to be? What's it going to include? Give us all the rundown of how exciting that thing is.
Yeah, I am so excited for the community celebration. I think it's probably the thing that I'm most excited about for the project, just because I just know, like, events are kind of, well, historically, events are where how we've really engaged the Filipino community. And so I'm excited for that. And all events that are hosted at Philcom Hall are open to the entire Juneau community. So anybody can come down to the hall at South Franklin on Saturday from 12 to 5. And so pretty much October 7th is the day when we have a lot of different things going on. And the goal behind that day was really to kind of talk about Filipino identity in Juneau by talking about, you know, revisiting our history while also kind of presenting it with our present. So the way that the schedule is kind of mapped out is we have things like the photo books that I mentioned earlier will be on display. There will also be a ton of different these plaques, and, you know, the space is really built so that it can be a place for people to come and reflect on the long, over 100 years of history of this community. But then at the same time, we, you know, inside the historic space itself, we have a lot of cool modern things going on. Like, we're going to have some cultural workshops for people to learn Filipino martial arts, drumming. So if you remember, like, on July 4th, there are folks that, you know, dress up in these large feathery costumes that kind of look like eagles. And then, you know, you have like the line of drummers. We're going to have someone from that group teach Filipino drumming. And we also have Theater Alaska, who is putting on a cabaret of a ton of Filipino artists around town, and they will be performing. And then, of course, we have food. So, you know, like, the obvious thing.
Wouldn't be a celebration without food,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And, it, you know, all of this is free to the community, too. Like, it's for anyone. For Saturday, it's really kind of like a nice walk-in event. You can come in, pop by, hang out, grab some snacks, listen to some music, maybe attend a workshop, do some kids' activities, too, if you want to learn traditional games. And look through the photo books. There's just like a lot of cool things going on from that 12 to 5 slot that you can, that'll be kind of an opportunity to be able to engage with the community, but also just learn about who we are, who we were in the past, but who we are now.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like those books would be really fun to sort of, the photo books would be fun to look through and see the history, all the things that have been donated, as you mentioned, the personal story about that. And that is at 251 South Franklin Street. It's October 7th from 12 to 5. And there's going to be Filipino food, cultural workshops, live music, the installation that will be there. It sounds like a really great, warm and open event to all, right, as a great kickoff. So let's talk about real quick the I know the museum is also having an exhibit that's going to run for, I think, 2 months. And I know that's going to be at the Juneau Douglas City Museum. They'll be on the show this week to give us some more detail about that. But just give us like a basic idea of what that museum exhibit's going to be about.
Sure. Absolutely. So the MAGA Cuento exhibit is much more focused on how the Filipino community organization itself has come to be over the years and what that means for the organization now. the history is really long. It's also really complicated. And we'll actually, I'm excited for Adeline's episode, episode 3 of the Manga Cuento podcast series, to dive more deeply into that. But the exhibit's kind of like a visual taste of that same history, plus a little bit of other extra stuff too that I curated. And so it'll be really cool. I'm just trying to think of all the things that are in there because there's so many really cool items. We'll obviously be having a couple of the past costumes from our old Ali Tap Tap dance group. Same thing with the Ati Ati Han, the thing that I mentioned for July 4th, those big eagle-like costumes will also be on display.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we have cool items like that. But then we also have these really exciting photos. Like I got a loan from one of our really wonderful dedicated volunteers. And she basically has this photo of the Filipino community in 1931. Or was it 32? 1931 or 32. And it's huge. And this photo actually used to live at Safeway before. Yeah. It was super funny because just last night when I was delivering some posters for the event, I came into the Twilight Cafe, who is, by the way, helping to cater for the October 7th, just the October weekend events. And I was chatting with one of the owners and he saw the photo on the poster and he was like, wait, I remember this from Safeway. Like, he brought over his wife and he was just like, don't you remember this was on the Safeway wall? And she was like, what are you talking about?
Wow.
But anyway, getting on with that, we have that photo, which is now in Mona Stevic's belonging because her grandfather is pictured right in the center playing, I think it's a saxophone. Because back in those days, like, they would just have a ton of really music focused events.
Yeah.
And so there's like this giant photo of that hanging on the wall as well. But yeah, just a ton of really
cool. That's cool. And that'll be part of the first Friday. I'm sure the museum will be open to the public that first Friday, probably from 4:30 to 7.
Yes.
And like I said, they'll be on the show to give us a little more detail about what's going on with that event.
It'll actually be 4 to 7.
Oh, and 4 to 7.
There will also be food there. That will be more like dessert-y snacks. So if you recognize like Mel from Boca, they will be having some nice desserts there too. So.
Wow, just food all around. I love
it. Yes, it wouldn't be a Filipino thing without any food, especially food with Filipino flavors. You got to show up and show out.
Gunnit Chi, Shalamat for Tasha giving us a preview in part one of that interview. You can visit the homepage of KTO.org and KTO socials on Instagram and Facebook as more details emerge out of this week. All the events are happening this weekend and they basically begin on Friday. You can also visit the Filipino Community Inc. on Facebook, and more to come tomorrow from the museum and more on Friday on the podcast. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO from Studio 2K. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Time once again for the Arts Roundup with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Phil Hibshin is in the house. Gunnit Chish, and welcome back, Phil.
Hello. Thank you for having me, as always.
Absolutely. Congrats on Ok Rock. It was an awesome festival.
Thank you so much.
Now, I know we have a lot going on and we have just a few minutes. So what's on the schedule for this month, Phil?
So much. We're really going to rock it through it today. Starting this Friday, first Friday, at the Juno Arts and Culture Center, we have Bo Anderson. It's actually a dual show, Bo Anderson and Amanda Faith Thompson. Their exhibits are titled Cut It Out and Stickered North.
Awesome.
Both are titles I love. You might actually recognize Bo's art from the free little art gallery at the City Museum. If you haven't heard of that, definitely go check it out. It's around the left-hand side of the City Museum. There's a little... It kind of looks like a free community library sort of thing, but you can open it up and take some artwork.
He's also been part of the 12 by 12.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's great. The show is made out of his scrap wood sculptures. And there's a lot of innovation and kind of whimsy in his work, if you're familiar. So that'll be really cool. His Instagram handle, which I love, @teampoweraw. More content there. So check that out. And then Amanda Faith Thompson's work is kind of an exploration and almost like a marriage between her painted works and stickers. Everyone loves stickers.
We love stickers.
We love stickers. So she plays with scale and repetition in a really interesting way in this exhibit. And it kind of explores the functionality and physicality of her own medium. So definitely check out the Arts and Culture Center this Friday. That's opening at 4:00 and the exhibit is up through the month. Bustin' Out Boutique has a really cool one that I'm excited about this month, titled The Cozy Crystal Cavern, which is a variety of artwork and craft work by Juno students Eva, Lucy, Narissa, and Tegan. I apologize. I don't have their last names available. I would plug them if I had them, but I don't. But they're young students who have done a lot of really cool, intricate drawings, fiber works, and paper craft, exploring their experiences and processes through the COVID-19 pandemic.
Just go to Bustin' Out Boutique and meet them on Friday.
Go right? to Bustin' Out Boutique yeah. and meet them.
There you go.
5% of proceeds from their sales will go to the Juno Animal Rescue, and all the remaining proceeds will go towards a series of educational trips for them.
That's cool.
So it's a really great way yeah. to support education, support animals, and support art. I encourage everyone to
love
go.
It.
Yeah. We also, not we, Kindred Post does. I don't run Kindred Post, but I'm always really excited about what they have going on there. They showcase artists in a really cool way recently through their pop-up kind of storefronts that they host in there. So this month, Fubao will have their Southeast Alaskan photos along with prints, postcards, calendars, and a whole lot of new releases.
Yeah, Fubao was on the show yes. last Friday. It looks awesome. His calendar is yeah, amazing.
It's going to be really cool.
Great. Yeah.
And that's first Friday only. So check that out, definitely. Yep. And I always like to plug the Juno Artist Gallery this time of year is the Juno Appreciation Sale. So it's 15% off, including items that are already marked down. And that's Wednesday the 4th through Saturday the 7th.
So that starts tomorrow.
That starts tomorrow. Yep. So if you want to get a head start on holiday shopping, check that out. Yeah, they always have treats and everything, so check it out. Okay, what else do we have? Stuff happening at the Arts and Culture Center this month. Quarteto Nuevo, excuse me. We were just talking about this. They are coming up on October 9th at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at jahc.org. This group is really cool. They're from Los Angeles. They've won several awards. Think like Western classical, Eastern European folk, Latin, and jazz. So there's a lot of different inspirations
cool.
and kind of pieces in their work that is going to be really cool to hear. And they're actually debuting original pieces for the first time at this concert in Juno. So definitely come check that out. I'm also going to be plugging, we have a clown class with Tally Medell coming up on the 16th, 17th, and 18th at 6 p.m. And that's in partnership with Perseverance Theater. So it's actually at Perseverance Theater.
Okay.
Tickets for that are also on our website. Tally, if you don't know, has received an Academy Award for her work in a recent blockbuster film, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Love.
Which is an amazing movie. If you haven't seen it, go see it. Tally's in that. She was born and raised in Ketchikan. And she teaches clowning classes. And this is a really cool opportunity for everyone in Juno. I've spoken with Tally about it, and she has a really cool take on it. Don't think like honk honk pie in the face clowning. It's not that, unless you want it to be that. but she was telling me, historically, clowns have been like radical truth speakers who have been exempt from persecution. So it's really about liberation and bodily liberation and how to actualize what you want to actualize in a really interesting, radical way.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
where do we find out more information about that?
You can check out her Instagram. We have a few posts on our Instagram as well, which we link to. I don't know her handle off the top of my head. I apologize. But tickets are available on our website and there's more information there.
JAHC.org
and click the big golden ticket button.
All right. Probably time for one more thing.
Okay. Oh, not three more things. Are you sure? We have Stress-Free Art Night October 25th at the Jack. It's a collage theme that's free and open to the public. We have Pumpkin Spice Market on October 21st at 10 a.m. That's a really cool free public market for more early holiday shopping. And then the last thing I'm going to plug really quick is we have our annual Juno Arts and Humanities Council annual membership meeting on October 18th, which is open to all our members. And we'll be talking about general state of affairs, what's going on and all of that good stuff. So I encourage everyone to come.
And more information about all of that at jahc.org. I also want to mention quickly that the Visceral is closing this weekend at the Alaska State Museum. Free admission on Friday's First Friday from 4:37. Also free admission on Indigenous Peoples Day, which is Monday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. to be able to see that wonderful exhibit, Visceral, at the museum. All right. Well, thank you, Phil, for joining us.
Thank you.
And appreciate you, as always, for coming in.
Thank you so much.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a terrific Tuesday. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello out the road. Find the show online at KTOO.org/JunoAfternoon. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Have a terrific day, everybody.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the shoe ye, where Kashuk are ye tin. Jin katka ke jin talk, anachaya ha anikach, gunish cheese.